The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
In the early 1960s, the United Nations was regarded as humankind's best hope for ending war. A peaceful world seemed possible. In a book called Peacemaker, Thant Myint Ou shows the often forgotten role played by his grandfather, Secretary General U Thant, in many of the pivotal confrontations of the mid-20th century, from the Congo to the Cuban Missile Crisis, the 1967 Arab-Israel War, to Vietnam. U Thant's tireless efforts gave voice to the newly decolonized world as he championed racial equality, environmental protection, and a fair international economy, all the while working to prevent a third world war. Joining me now is the author of Peacemaker and award-winning historian Thant Myint Ou. Thant, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
First of all, talk to me about how your grandfather achieved this high office. It would not have been written in his prospects as a young man.
No, it's really a remarkable story. So until he was almost 40 years old, he lived in a small town in Burma, which was then part of the British Empire. So a day's steamer ride away from Rangoon, which was the capital. And he was a school teacher, headmaster of a school in this little town without electricity, running water. And when he was about 38 or 39, he decided on a midlife career change. And within 10 years after entering government service in Rangoon, he became or found himself the Burmese ambassador to the UN and was living in midtown Manhattan in the middle of this new global politics.
What an extraordinary story.
It was an extraordinary story. And it was possible, I think, to some extent, because even in that little town, he was reading voraciously, subscribing to every newspaper, magazine he could get his hands on from London and Calcutta. So he always wanted to be a man of the world. But it took him to New York eventually, and eventually the Secretary Generalship.
If you can characterize the UN at that time, it was, relatively speaking, in its infancy, and there were great hopes for its capabilities.
There were hopes, and so it was initially founded and intended to be a sort of enforcement, peace enforcement mechanism with the wartime alliance of the US, the USSR, and the UK at the center. But that never really worked out because of the Cold War and the Russians and the Americans being on opposing sides and both having vetoes in the Security Council. But by the late 1950s, it was being transformed in a completely unintended direction where the Secretary General, at that time Dag Hammarskjöld, emerged as the world's preeminent mediator. And it was being transformed in another way as well, which was that all these newly decolonized countries like Burma, but also India, Ghana, Indonesia, all the rest, were coming into the UN and transforming it in the direction of greater human rights, decolonization, a real embrace of the UN's core principles.
How united were the different decolonized nations? I mean, some of them colonized by Britain, many of them colonized by Britain, others by different colonial powers. How united were they in this post-colonial world?
This was a moment, perhaps a brief moment of several years, where they were in many ways very united, because they were very united around this agenda, especially of decolonization, finishing, making possible this transition from empire to post-empire, and wanting to make their independence meaningful. So not just a piece of paper that the British or the French gave them, or a ceremony or something else, but to come into a new international system centered on the UN and based on the equality of states. Mm.
Now, when we see elected leaders in any part of the world, they can, with the change of leadership, can come a change of policy, a change of mood, a change of perception of those leaders and indeed of those countries. So people do matter. What was it about your grandfather that gave him that kind of influence?
I think partly he was riding this wave of these countries that call themselves the Afro-Asians into the UN. They were the core of the non-aligned movement. Both the Americans and the Russians were courting them in different ways. But he had developed a reputation in New York, even as Burmese ambassador, as the man who got along with everyone. He was an extrovert. In the village, there's a story where, you know, he and my grandmother used to take strolls after dinner, and he never got beyond the third house because he wanted to stay and chat with everyone. So he was a very sociable person. He liked to be around people, and he brought those skills also to the UN. But he was also someone of a very calm temperament. And I think he understood the historical moment he was in, what the UN could do and needed to do, and also perhaps in some ways what it couldn't do.
And was it important that he understood, I mean, he obviously living in Manhattan as a Burmese ambassador, he got to know the West. He was an Anglophile anyway. But he also understood the Asian world.
That's right. And I think he saw himself in the beginning, before a lot of frustration sort of set in over the 1960s as Secretary General, as someone who could be a bridge builder between that world of newly decolonized countries and the West. And he thought Burma and Britain were good friends. Why couldn't that be the case with all these other countries as well?
Now, the most potentially disastrous crisis was the Cuban Missile Crisis. And as a child, I remember I went to a circus one night and I wondered, even as I sat there as a child watching the lions and whatever and the horses performing, were the missiles actually flying over my head from east to west? It was a totally preoccupying and worrying time, even for a child. How did he get involved in diffusing that crisis?
I mean, normally the way the story is told is that, you know, Kennedy, President Kennedy, establishes a blockade. He stands tough against the Russians and the Russians back down. And very rarely is the story told where there's a Burmese mediator in between. And he did. Within 24 hours of President Kennedy making his announcement on TV, announcing this blockade, he sent a series of messages, both secret and also public, to both sides, Nikita Khrushchev in Moscow, as well as John Kennedy in Washington, and essentially trying to craft the intervention that would allow both men the time and the space needed for diplomacy. It was a time when both sides were not speaking to each other directly, and so he knew he had to insert himself in the right way so that both sides would respect him and use him as that neutral point of reference, which happened over many weeks. At one point, he was shuttling in his outer office between delegations from Washington and from Moscow. He even flew down to Havana to see Fidel Castro to try to get him on board as well at the end of October. It's a fascinating story, which I tell in my book, but it's been almost entirely airbrushed out of history.
And what is it about your grandfather that gave him the charisma, I suppose, and also the influence to talk to these people and for them to accept him as mediator?
I think it's a couple of things. I mean, one is it's his personality and his willingness to take risks, I think, was really important in that role. I mean, he had no mandate to intervene in the Cuban Missile Crisis, for example. He could have stood aside and just, you know, saw what happened like everyone else. But I think the prestige of the UN and the prestige of that office was also very high at that time. And we were still, you know, much less than a generation away from the men and women who had experienced two horrific world wars and a Great Depression in between in their lifetimes.
Now, what was your grandfather's role in the Six-Day War of 1967?
So in 67, the UN still had a peacekeeping force. It was put there after the Suez Crisis. And as tensions rose, President Nasser, who was the president of Egypt at the time, asked the UN to withdraw those forces. So my grandfather prevaricated. He tried to buy time. He had to formally agree because he had no choice. But he tried urgently. He flew to Cairo to try to prevent the war, but he was unable to. And he was scapegoated for that. Both the Egyptians and the Israelis were preparing for war. The Americans, we know now, were secretly greenlighting the Israeli invasion of Egypt, which would take place in June of 1967. But they scapegoated him by saying that it was because of his formal decision to pull out those 2,000 peacekeepers that war became inevitable. And so that was an enormous blow, both to him in the US and UK media, but also to him personally, because I think he felt he had been very unfairly treated.
Now, he had to, if you like, face down the big powers from time to time. And most notably, I suppose, in the Vietnam War, he attempted to defuse that situation, running against U.S. policy, which, when you're based in Manhattan, is going to be a hard thing to do.
I mean, in some ways, that was his biggest challenge. I mean, the Cuban one was probably his most consequential in some ways. But for 5 years, I mean, he had to decide. He was very much in good standing with Washington in 1964. But then he had to decide, would he challenge them essentially on their biggest national security issue? And he tried secret talks between the Vietnamese and the Americans. It didn't work. He had a good relationship with Lyndon Johnson, who was the president at the time. But over a couple of years, he began to publicly criticize the Americans. He said that an end to the bombing was going to be essential as a first step for peace. And he basically incurred the wrath of the whole national security establishment in Washington as a result over those 5 years, but survived politically nonetheless.
Now, we have observed the role of the UN kind of changing from this peacekeeping or peacemaking role at trying to defuse wars to more a relief organization addressing humanitarian issues right throughout the globe. Do you think the airbrushing of your grandfather from much of this history is responsible in some way for this, or did it happen in parallel with it?
I suppose it's in parallel. I mean, it's a couple of things. I mean, one is the UN changed its sort of nature. So for a couple of decades, it continued to mediate. In the late 1980s, it secured many different peace deals from El Salvador to East Timor to Cambodia to Namibia and elsewhere. And there were some successful and some disastrous peacekeeping operations in the 1990s. But as you say, after that, the UN's sort of political role, its role in peacemaking, declined. And instead, we have this, I think, not equal substitute, which is simply trying to provide humanitarian assistance in these places. But I think with my grandfather, the reason that people don't remember him, I think it brings to question this whole issue of what kind of people do we remember? Do we remember only the tough guys, the louder politicians? And why do we often forget the people who are trying to seek compromise, trying to seek a peaceful solution out of these conflicts?
Do you think we can rehabilitate the role of the UN in the world? Because at the moment, you can see the Israelis are thumbing their nose at the UN. Donald Trump certainly is.
It's going to be tough because, as you know, I mentioned before, I think we're so much further from the wisdom of those people who founded the UN, who felt after two world wars that we had to have an alternative, a different kind of peace architecture. But one thing I think to look forward to in some ways is that in a year's time, the world will select a new UN Secretary General. And I think people matter, leadership matters, and hopefully we'll have the right person. And with the right person, I think almost anything is possible still.
So that is the current problem. Without criticizing Guterres particularly, his influence does not seem to be writ large across the agendas of the big powers.
I think the Secretary General now has had a very difficult time. It's a tough political moment. As you mentioned, the big powers are either turning away from the UN or defunding it or criticizing it directly. But I think, again, with the right person who focuses, again, on peacemaking, on mediation, on the kind of interventions, as my grandfather was able to accomplish during the Cuban Missile Crisis, it's needed. Because if we, you know, we are in a world of many more nuclear states, we shouldn't be sanguine about the possibilities of nuclear confrontation. And if we have maybe even an accidental nuclear confrontation escalation, who is going to play the role that he played in 1962?
And where does that person have to come from? What part of the world do you think?
There's an informal system of rotation, and so the Latin Americans believe it's their turn. But I think in a way that we should move away from thinking about specific regions and think about the kind of person, the personality, the temperament, the experience, the kind of role that he or she, hopefully it'll be a woman for the first time, that he or she will play. And again, I think it should be someone who comes into the job from that sort of peacemaking background.
Well, this is no dusty historical tome, I have to say. It's brilliantly written and very gripping.
Thank you.
It's called Peacemaker, Uthant, the United Nations and the Untold Story of the 1960s. And its author, Uthant's grandson, Thant Myunt Ul, thank you very much for joining
Thank you.
Us
Thanks
in
very
studio
much.
Today. All right.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.